11 now. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Pete Zimmerman, the producer. I'm John Williams, and our usual gang of guests will join us, plus some special guests on the show today. I just want to mention this, too. You can hear me weekdays from 9 to noon, and then we do the Wintrust Business Lunch, and I think Pete puts together a terrific show, but I sort of change gears when I get in here. For this show, we do the business one. But I do want to say something about the last segment we just did. And that is that I know a lot of you are very interested and attuned to what Kyle Rittenhouse's mother and attorney were saying, and some of you did not like what you were hearing. I was getting information from them, but I think what we'll do tomorrow is play back part of that conversation and then give you a chance to sound off. I was not judging the case. I was hearing what their defense or positions were right now, what their attitude was about it. And I didn't like or believe everything that I heard, but again, I'm just getting the information. And I know some of you wanted to sound off. We'll give you a chance to do that tomorrow when we play back part of that conversation. Let's talk about the business scene right now. We asked John DeGerian to join us Tuesdays at this time, and there he is. Hi again, John. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing very well. Thank you, John.
What was your reaction to the markets yesterday and the whole world of finance?
Well, I think all of us will certainly cheer when a vaccine, not just therapies, but a vaccine is indeed delivered in quantity. And yesterday was a very good day as far as not just the markets, but as far as the hope that that day is not as far away. It's, in fact, closing in on us. And there are a number of other candidates that will likewise be out there. And this one was one that has a lot of support in both Europe and the United States, two of the biggest drug companies in the world working on it, and a 90% success rate. That's pretty darn good, John.
Yeah, no kidding. Still, do you think the market overreacted a little bit? I forget what the Dow closed up, but it was about 1,300 last I looked. Did the market react appropriately, too high, too low? What do you think?
Well, it was a pretty significant rotation that has been underway for several sessions on Wall Street, and that was a rotation away from the tech stocks that have benefited from the lockdown and the stay-at-home economy and towards some of those reopening plays, everything from Norwegian Cruise Line, American Airlines, United Airlines, Marriott, I mean, you name it, anything where those stocks were at the epicenter of people fleeing the market, they were all of a sudden in big demand yesterday because of the idea that we're not that far away from a vaccine and or significant therapies for COVID, and that's great news for everybody.
A rotation you described was kind of fascinating, wasn't it? So, but at the same time, Peloton goes down, Teladoc goes down, Zoom, imagine that, goes down.
Yep. Well, because many of those, as you've talked about incessantly and accurately, the stocks that benefit from the shutdown are benefiting in a huge way. You know, everything from Amazon, which was also down yesterday and today, to the Teladocs and the Pelotons, until all of a sudden today, Beyonce basically peddling Peloton.
Nice.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that.
Yeah.
There was a pretty significant jump in that stock because of Beyonce, not just the fact that Peloton is a stay-at-home stock, which had worked against them, but all of a sudden when it's Beyonce pushing this, that's a very big lift, and that was very positive for the stock.
I sensed a little, not pessimism, but caution in your opening remarks to us, though, today, that you're going to wait and see how quickly this can be scaled and delivered and how effective it is. But it's sure... It sure was good news. Everybody sure rejoiced yesterday.
Yeah. And I didn't mean to have either trepidation or, a delayed positive in my voice. It's just that this particular vaccine has to be stored at very, very cold temperatures. And that's fine for the developed world. It means this vaccine is not really applicable to the developing world. And there's an awful lot of outbreak in the developing world. So yeah, hopefully some of those alternative therapies and vaccines will be better for places where you don't have the ability to store at, minus
90 degrees
centigrade,
yeah,
and so forth.
Well,
yeah,
in fact, I forget where it was. Was it Puerto Rico or there was a location where somebody was talking on the radio yesterday about the fact that, and it was in our hemisphere, and they said one of these, any single one of these freezers that we need to keep the vaccine at that proper temperature, we don't have one of them. We do not have one of those freezers. And then you think, well, what about Australia? What about Africa? What about, India and Indonesia? You just think about all of the places where the climate is different or people are so spread out. Are they going to have the resources to deliver this thing? It's daunting, isn't it?
It is indeed. And, I'm down here at Tulane University speaking down here, and they're one of the epicenters of virology in the United States and the study of things like vaccines and obviously the ability to deliver a vaccine that doesn't require those super cold temperatures for storage to keep it viable. I think that is going to be one of the challenges, but it's a challenge they can meet. And I look forward to that. And I think overall yesterday, though, was great news for all of us.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that. By the way, what's the title of your speech at Tulane?
Let's see. I was visiting professor in the finance, the Freeman School of Business, and it was basically investing in the post-COVID world.
Let's you and I spend more time on that topic, although we kind of do all of the time anyway, but maybe a few more specifics next time. It's good to hear you. Thanks, John.
Thanks very much.
John DeGeri, you betcha, the founder of MarketRebellion.com, MarketRebellion.com. Restaurateur, entrepreneur, native Chicagoan Bill Rancic joins us. He's got a new pizza joint I'm hearing about. Bill, you're on WGN. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
When did you get the idea for this latest Bill's Original Tavern Pizza?
You know, we've been talking about it. Kelly Clancy's one of our partners, and really is a fellow Southsider. You know, she grew up in the South Side as well as I did, and you know, we were talking about this literally for months and months and months, and you know, we thought this is actually an excellent time to launch it because people are, you know, staying at home more, they're ordering in more, and we wanted to just bring a little bit of the South Side to the rest of the city.
Yeah, to River North, huh?
To River North, and we deliver everywhere. So, we think it was pretty special. You know, we grew up going to Fox's Pub and Traverso's and Aurelio's and all those great pizza places on the South Side. So, Kelly, and I and RJ and Jared and Molly, we all kind of came up with this idea, and we launched it about a week ago, and it's getting really great reviews, and people love it, so we're excited to share it with everybody.
Yeah, again, it's Bill's Original Tavern Pizza. So is it a tavern, or is it a pizza place, or is it just a kind of pizza that I can pick up at grocery stores and stuff like that?
Well, right now we're doing just pickup and delivery. We're operating out of our, we have the facility at 321 North Clark where it's RPM Seafood and RPM Events. So you can pick it up there or you can have it delivered. And then in January we're going to start rolling it out to brick and mortar locations. So we're going to hopefully head over to Wicker Park and just throughout different parts of the city.
So this is a subject near and dear to Chicagoans, right? Like pizza and then kinds of pizza and maybe neighborhoods for kinds of pizza. Is the South Side favor the thinner crust and the North Side favor the thicker crust? Would you draw that demarcation line that way?
You know, I think the South Side's thinner, but it's a little bit doughier. I don't know. And just we'll probably be a little more creative with some of the toppings. You know, I think it's, it can, you know, everyone has their own specific taste, but obviously growing up on the South Side, this is something that I grew up with and really cherish and I love. And, you know, along with the pizza, you know, we've got, cannolis and just a lot of, you know, really good, South Side favorites that, you know, something we all kind of just cherished as a kid.
How do you describe then your pizza? How do you describe tavern style pizza?
Well, again, it's a little bit doughier. It's thin. And again, we get a lot of, creative ways to, you know, top it. You know, we have, a buffalo chicken. We have, barbecue chicken. You know, we have a meat lovers. You know, my favorite, the Italian sausage, pizza. So, you know, we're having a lot of fun with it. We're coming up with some, creative, you know, toppings. We have green pepper, mushroom, onion, toppings. So, it's, you know, it's just something I think you have to try, and I think once you try it, you're going to fall in love with it.
Yeah. And obviously you opened October 30th, so you knew full well what you were getting into here. Were there any thoughts at some point along the way to wait, or maybe this was the right time to be delivering pizza? What was your thought about
it? Yeah, you know, we felt it was the right time. Again, people are staying at home more. They're, you know, quarantining, and they're, you know, eating and their homes, you know, with their pods or their families. So we just thought this was a great opportunity for us to do it. We certainly have the room. You know, we have a private event space at 321 North Clark with a big kitchen there. So we thought it was a perfect time to do it. We wanted to share it with everyone, and you know, we're gonna grow this concept throughout Chicago, I think, and I think it's gonna do real well. And then eventually, you know, we'll be able to deliver anywhere in the United States where we can send it, you know, frozen style and overnight it to people. You know, I love sending, you know, pizzas to people that aren't from Chicago, and it's a real treat. We usually do it at the holiday time.
Yeah.
And, you know, our friends in the West Coast and on the East Coast, that's the one thing they look forward to every holiday time is when Julian and I send them some deep dish pizzas.
So you want to be to the rest of the country with tavern style pizza, maybe what Malnati's is for deep dish pizza, huh?
I mean, I think eventually, you know, we got to dream big, and you got to start somewhere. So, for now, we're pick up and delivery, and then, you know, we'll start opening some physical locations, and then hopefully we'll be able to share it with you know, with all parts of the United States.
You're also doing cocktails to go?
We have great cocktails to go. We have a great beverage director. We're opening early on Sundays, so you can get it delivered before football starts. And we're really trying to make people, enjoy this and make it as easy as they possibly can. Amazing desserts to go. So there's a lot, just one phone call and your party is covered.
I don't know how you're going to make it delivering pizza, dessert, and cocktails in Chicago, but maybe during football season, maybe that's a good plan. I don't know. I'm not in the restaurant business.
We feel pretty good about it. We're really excited, and you know, we're glad that the city is welcoming the concept and enjoying it. And you know, we're really proud of it. And again, Kelly, who's one of our partners, Kelly, she's really kind of coming up with great, you know, recipes from her family and from the South Side where she grew up as well. So it's been a great team effort, and everyone on the RPM team has really been chipping in to make sure Bill's Tavern Pizza is, you know, a success.
So, but if you're in the River North area right now, I mean, and you're delivering from that one location, then I presume I can't get it everywhere right now, right? It would be more for the central core of the city.
We have DoorDash. We have Grubhub.
Yeah.
You can order BillsOriginalTavernPizza.com, Bill's Tavern Pizza on Instagram. So there's a lot of ways you can get it. And, you know, we're certainly going to make it as easy as humanly possible.
Yeah, no kidding.
Have it delivered hot and fresh right to your door, to your, you know, to your office, to wherever you're at.
To-go cocktails include a burnt paloma with mezcal, grapefruit, and lime, and the Black Manhattan, I'm reading from your menu now, with bourbon, Averna, Angostura bitters. Manhattans are a popular drink these days, at least in my social circle. What's Averna? What's a Manhattan with Averna like?
You know what? That's a great question, and I'm going to have either Richard or Ben from our beverage department get back to you on that. They kind of have free rein on that, and they have the run of the cocktail list.
Yeah. This is normally the sort of interview that then the guest sends over a whole bunch of pizza to the restaurant.
Which we would love to do, actually. So
and then the
consider
host,
it done. How about tomorrow?
The host says, wow, now that's a nice Manhattan or pizza. No, no, no. We'll pay our freight. But listen, I like the idea of somebody hiring. I like the idea of somebody trying something in what is a crowded space. And I think that the idea of a tavern style pizza is not fully tapped out. I think you've got a sweet spot there, Bill.
Well, you know, I think COVID shouldn't stifle innovation. You know, I mean, I think people are realizing you have to adapt, you have to adjust, you have to be agile. Otherwise, you become extinct. And, you know, we're seeing innovation happen everywhere. You know, this is bringing out the best in people, and they're realizing, you know what, we're not going to let this win. We're going to fight. We're going to, you know, keep things going and evolving and growing. And I think that's what we're trying to do here, and keep people employed. You know, small business is something that's very important to me. I think it's the backbone of, you know, of innovation in America. And, you know, if you look at all the big businesses out there today, they all started out small. So, you know, we certainly are trying to do our part, and we encourage everyone else to do the same.
There's a new pizza in town, BillsOriginalTavernPizza.com, BillsOriginalTavernPizza.com. Bill Ranson, good luck to you. Thanks for the time today.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
You betcha. 12:30. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's visit with then Venetia Stifler. Venetia, this is John, and you're on WGN Radio. How are you today?
I'm great, John. Thank you for having me.
You get extra time because I'm not playing a commercial right now.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Let's make the most of this.
Okay.
You are the executive and artistic director at the Ruth Page Center for the Arts. Folks can visit ruthpage.org to find out more. First of all, just tell us how the operation is doing. Are you guys able to offer your venue for shows? Is it up and running?
It's running, kind of. We're a little like a restaurant, but you just heard some direction from the governor about how to handle things in general, and we've had to follow the CDC guidelines. So we're operating with fewer people in the building. But, you know, we're creative. Creativity never stops moving here at the Ruth Page Center. And we've come up with some creative ways to continue giving classes and doing performances so that artists can continue to develop. Because if you take 2 years off as a dancer, you can't get those back. You can't sit on the couch for 2 years and then hope to have your career go forward. And that's our mission. We train and develop artists and connect them with audiences, which is a challenge during this pandemic. So what we've done is limit the number of people who are allowed in the building, limit the number of people in classes, followed all the CDC guidelines for ventilation. We stay at least six feet apart, even while we're dancing. The teachers are, everyone is masked. So we've been able to operate at about a third of our normal capacity. And of course our theater, which has been a wonderful place for musical theater and Shakespeare and opera, really is not operating at the moment. But we have some interesting things coming up for the holidays.
You're talking about the Winter Spectacular, right?
Yes, yes.
So how are you going to pull that off, and what does that mean? People think of a Nutcracker. Tell me what you're going to be doing.
Well, luckily, we have the center, a space, at 1016 North Dearborn, and it's an older building, so the land of the Nutcracker. We will take them in small groups. They will walk up the stairs, and they will see Act One of the Nutcracker. And then we'll take them up another flight of stairs, and each group, no more than 10, will sit and watch the next section of the Nutcracker. And they'll go up to the third floor, and they'll see another section of the Nutcracker. And then they'll be escorted down through music and beautiful decoration of our building. I'm sitting in a room now that it looks like a winter wonderland because it has 20 the Christmas trees in it. So we're reproducing the sets and design of the Nutcracker only vertically in our building. And each studio will have five or six dancers dancing the section that is appropriate of the Nutcracker. And what I love the most is accompanying the dancing are these wonderful, wonderful set pieces that we've created to provide an environment. So I think, although this is not 300 people sitting in an audience watching something wonderful on the stage, it'll be an immersive experience. It will be safe. It will follow all the guidelines that we should. People coming to our building have been very cooperative. No one is, you know, not doing what they should do. And we've retrofitted the building so that the ventilation system is, you know, what it should be. And we're all trained in how to stay distanced. We take everybody's temperature before they come in. Everyone's very cooperative. And I think that this tradition of the Ruth Page Nutcracker, which started in 1963, really is so important to maintain. Our mission is to make sure that artists still, under these very difficult situations, still meet their audiences and develop as artists. We don't want to lose this generation of artistry. We want them to be able to perform. So even, you know, this is our solution for now. And we hope that it doesn't stay this way forever, but it's going to be really great. I think it's going to be beautiful. And I know that I am really excited to participate.
I can tell.
And, I'm glad. We're about to celebrate 50 years at this location. And that's something, especially in the arts world, that's something to be proud of. And I'm so honored to be the artistic executive director of it. And, you know, my staff has been more than happy and willing to put in the extra time it takes to do what they need to do to stay safe.
Venetia Stifler's on the phone line. She's the executive and artistic director at the Ruth Page Center for the Arts. Ruthpage.org is the website. How will you integrate music then? If I'm going from floor to floor and seeing the scenes and watching the dancers maybe act out different parts of the Nutcracker, how do you integrate music into this vertical production?
Well, that's a really great question that I'm glad you asked me. I have a very talented staff person who has the music planned out. As you walk up the stairs, you get the introduction, the overture. As you walk past the land of trees, you get that specific movement, that specific music. So everything will be in the building will be planned so the music matches what's in the space.
Understood.
You're in.
It's not performed live then. It's pre-recorded then.
Right. It's safer this way. Of course, we'd love to have a live orchestra, but again, we're trying to do it as creatively as we can, but as safely. And since the Nutcracker is primarily a ballet, we're aiming to give the dancers the opportunity to keep their artistry growing. Hopefully, when we're in a theater, we can talk about adding more elements.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you also just sort of put it in perspective for us. We think about athletes who are down for COVID-19 or their leagues aren't playing, so they're not practicing or they're not playing, and you think maybe they're getting rusty, but so too might people in the performing arts. It's vital for them as professionals and for us as a community to continue to be able to experience it, both as people on the stage and people that are in the audience. And it's glad to hear that you all have been innovative enough, Venetia, that it's working. Executive and Artistic Director at the Ruth Page Center. They have an auction coming up online you can find out more about. You can get tickets to the event she just described by visiting ruthpage.org. Thank you for your time today, and good luck to everybody over there.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's 12:43 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's get you another Business Minute with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Health experts recommend that people not travel during the holiday season, but United Airlines is taking steps just in case people do decide to fly. There'll be 1,400 additional flights offered by United Thanksgiving week. That's about a 15% increase in capacity, and it comes amid a new spike in COVID-19 cases nationwide. The FAA could complete the inspection process of the proposed changes to Boeing 737 MAX in the coming days. Reuters reports the federal agency could greenlight the plane to return to the sky commercially as early as November 18th. The 737 MAX was involved in two fatal crashes that killed more than 340 people. And the University of Illinois is set to head a $2 million cybersecurity education project. A team at the university is putting together a program to educate the public about the cybersecurity field. The curriculum is being created for the Critical Infrastructure Resilience Institute and will be implemented at colleges and schools across the country. The focus of the program will be on rural, minority, and gender inclusivity to create a diverse workforce. The U.S. is experiencing a national shortage of cybersecurity professionals. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Let's take a little time here with Amy Guth to talk about a couple of stories in the news, particularly what's going on at Target now. Amy, why don't you catch us up on that?
Yeah, I thought this was really interesting, and my gut feeling here is that we're probably going to see a lot more of this kind of coupling. So what's happening is that Ulta Beauty is going to open locations inside of Target stores, kind of like the idea of like the Target optical. It's in the store, but kind of off separate. It's going to be near the existing cosmetics areas within Target. They're going to start with about 100 stores starting next year and then increase that. They said 200 more. That was according to a statement that the two companies put out. But it'll be about 1,000 square feet of retail, and Target workers will FAFSA shops, but they will be trained by Ulta. So, you know, two big Midwestern brands there. Ulta, of course, based in Bolingbrook, and Target in the Twin Cities. So, you know, a very interesting partnership, but they really pointed to kind of the impact that Ulta felt from earlier mitigation measures from COVID. So Target was deemed essential, so it stayed open, and we saw both online and in-person sales go pretty well for Target. Ulta, however, was closed for quite a long time because they were not deemed essential, and so they did suffer this year in their sales number, although they did say their online sales were pretty strong. Their overall year-over-year sales will be down. So this partnership from both sides of them really said that they wanted to get into, you know, explore this stronger brand together and introduce one another to, you know, each other's customer base. But that's going to start next year, and that'll be interesting to see those start popping up.
I think Target could use anything to reinvigorate its brand anyway. How many of us shop at Target and have seen it over the years not have the kind of inventory or the kind of creativity that I think made it such an essential, a really popular, a fun place to shop? And this is pre-COVID, I'm thinking, and maybe editorializing a little here, but I think if they can do something to make it a more fun or unique experience, if it's brands, if it's displays, if it's color, if it's merchandise, I think Target could use that.
Well, I think we are going to start seeing some of these kind of partnerships. You know, we saw like Trunk Club move inside of Nordstrom earlier this year, things like that, these kind of special experiences within big stores. Excuse me. And I think one thing that Target pointed out in this release that I thought was really interesting is that as people are shopping in a different way now due to the pandemic, they're doing less browsing. There's less just kind of, I'll go out and pop into a few stores and see what I see. Stores like Target, where you can get a lot of different kind of things in one stop, have had a little bit of a resurgence, a little broader appeal, because that's, okay, that's one stop. That's getting out of the car one time, getting a lot of things I need. So for brands that have some kind of specialty base, like cosmetics, like Ulta does, bringing that into a store like Target, where people are already going to get all their stuff, that has a lot of customer appeal, according to their research and the bet that they're making to bring those kind of shops inside the Target to make for one less stop for consumers.
Steve Grzanich did the story a moment ago that United, though CDC is advising us not to travel, they know that we will. They're adding flights. Catch us up on the airline business. What else are you seeing today?
Yeah, so United's adding about 1,400 domestic flights. So that's a little over 15% of what they're doing now on peak days during Thanksgiving week. Anyone who has traveled that time in years prior, that is a very busy time for travel. So they are kind of making that bet that even though we're seeing a surge in COVID nationwide, that there's still going to be some people that will be traveling, so they want to accommodate that. They said that that will be, they're still going to have a little bit elevated rate in December, but they're, I think it's my guess is there's probably, like, let's see how Thanksgiving goes and then make some decisions about Christmas holidays based on how numbers are looking and how people travel. You know, they can make all the flights available they want. If people are not there, they're not there. So it's still, it's an uptick, but it's still not anywhere near where we were seeing pre-pandemic levels. But they are trying to, you know, I think all the airlines, not just United, but all the airlines are really trying to look for ways to find lost revenue after the travel industry was just so gutted, at one point nearly 97%, just so gutted by the pandemic and people not traveling, people, you know, a lot of travel restrictions, things like that. And especially on business and international travel, where they had a lot of, that was a lot of big revenue drivers there. So they're looking to make up that revenue, and we'll see those additions coming Thanksgiving week. They also noted they expect a lot of people to buy their tickets later. They said on average people buy them about 40 days ahead, which I don't know if I've ever bought a ticket that far ahead, but they said that's their average. They said they expect that number to go down and average into about 30 days. So as we go forward, I imagine, you know, I think what I would do in that situation is, okay, what does it look like right now? I think it's going to be a lot of, like, last-minute travel if we do see some big numbers for Thanksgiving week.
Yeah, I can just imagine people, even as they hear that news, still not certain if they're going to travel, and even if it's safe to travel, do they want to be where they're going? In a family gathering, maybe, even if it's safe to travel, folks won't feel safe at the destination that they're going to. So that's, I think, another concern for families all across the board. We are out of time. Okay, Amy, nice to talk to you. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Sean.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN.